You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
If storytelling is the currency of culture, then Sizwe Zim is one of its most strategic investors. As the managing director of Creative Space Media, Sizwe has spent nearly two decades building an in-house creative powerhouse that produces broadcast quality events, brand storytelling, and digital platforms like Impact Essay, a national portal elevating empowered South African changemakers with over 100 events a year. Did you hear that? Over 100 events a year. Top corporate clients and award-winning productions under his belt. He's not just executing, he is innovating at scale in a field where many talk but few execute. Tonight, we will be hearing about a business, yeah, but also unpacking a brand story ecosystem. We will explore how narrative can spark transformation, how social impacts can drive profits, and how a creative leader builds systems that serve vision. Prepare for a conversation where strategy meets storytelling, culture meets commerce, and purpose meets profits. Sizwe, it's so lovely to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. It's really an honor to be on the show. And what intro, wow.
I'm glad you love it. It sounds like you love it.
listen, gave me a little bit of imposter syndrome a little bit there because as you were thinking about, you know,
Sizwe, we're struggling to hear you, and I really want to hear this bit. The line keeps going in and out. I don't know if you can help us out there.
Is my line better yet?
Let's hear it.
All right. I was saying that I was getting a little bit of imposter syndrome by your intro. And just, you know, really remembering over the 20 years of, you know, us building this business and everybody that's involved in it.
Yeah.
And that the accolades, you know, can't really be attributed to a single person, but it's, you know, really a collective effort. And yeah, it's sure a journey.
And let's take you back there. 2006, Sizwe, you launched Creative Space Media. What are you thinking? What is that original spark and where is it coming from?
So, you know, as I say that, you know, the credit doesn't belong to one person, but I do want to attribute it. You know, I'm not the founder of Creative Space Media, but, you know, the founder is a dear friend of mine and obviously my business partner, you know, somebody who I really hold in high regard as an intellectual, but also, you know, a person that really works and really believes in you know the effort of, you know, your sweat and your hands working. Hayley Horan is the founder of the business, but then, you know, I, you know, sort of came on into the business a few years after its inception, and really partnered with her in, you know, building this brand that we have currently. I think what I do want to say, though, is that at the time of the inception, I was running a company called Beetroot Productions, also in the similar vein as what Creative Space Media is. So I think, you know, us finding each other was really built on a collective vision of not only building a business, but building a business that would eventually have impact and social impact at the center of everything that we built.
Yeah. What made you bite? What did Hayley say to you that you thought, listen, I have to be a part of this? Paint us the picture that you saw.
Listen, I think, you know, as I say, I think it was the collective vision. Beetroot Productions was also grounded, you know, on storytelling, you know, at a deep, deep level.
Yeah.
But, you know, where Hayley and I really connected was around, you know, making an impact and really building a communications agency or a marketing agency that centered around moving society forward. So everything that we build, everything that we do, every single event that we execute, every single campaign that we build, every single brand story that we tell is really centered around how do we move, you know, society forward. What is our contribution beyond the profit? You know, it's really you know, very evident in everything that we do, from the Hollard Daredevil run, which is, you know, a very fun run. You see guys running in Speedos.
Oh, that one.
That's the one.
Okay.
And at the center of it, it's really around raising awareness for prostate and testicular cancer. We do quite a lot of work in the disability sector. You know, when we started, you know, things and structures such as the BEE codes were, you know, a conversation in society and a conversation in the zeitgeist of South Africa, but not really any sort of legislated documents. And we sort of, I think, and I do stand corrected, but, you know, I stand on authority to say that we were one of the very first marketing or events agencies that, you know, went in and branched into enterprise and supplier development initiatives, into corporate social investment initiatives, obviously with the partners and the corporates that, you know, were part of this journey. But it was really all of this was really centered at centered on moving society forward. And I think that's where Haley and I connected.
Yeah, that sounds like such a sacred and deep purpose. And my show attracts listeners of a diverse kind, right? I'm thinking of somebody who's sitting at home like, this sounds so exciting, Moving Society Forward, but I have no idea what this organization does. So for the sake of the person who's so intrigued by what you're saying and they really want to know what you do, how you do it, please just detail that to us.
Great. Thanks, Mpumi. So Creative Space Media is a media agency. And our core business is around marketing, advertising, and media services. So it's everything from events, you know, to AV production, which is producing videos, to PR, you know, media engagement, crisis communications, you know, to publishing. We've got quite a long list of publications, you know, in our staple, you know, to, so it's really sort of a full spectrum, end to end of marketing. Marketing initiatives that we produce. So it's our business model, maybe as well to go into that, is not only just, you know, servicing corporate requirements and needs, but it's, you know, it's us conceptualizing products and initiatives in-house, then that we build and, you know, we get corporate and society's buy-in by and large. Earlier on, you mentioned Impact SA. You know, that is a portal, as you say, a web portal, and it's a communications portal that just really talks about the good work that is being done by, you know, individuals and corporates in different spheres of society, and just really highlighting that. So we're an end-to-end marketing agency, but really rooted on you know, purpose and impact.
Earlier, after I went through the intro, you mentioned imposter syndrome, and I think the best way to tackle or even stare imposter syndrome in the face is evidence. And I think I'd love to use this opportunity right now as that, right? A dare to imposter syndrome. I'd love for you to tell us about one project or one piece of work that to this day, when you think about it, just gives you goosebumps and gets you teary eyed because it was just that good.
That is an easy one. And you know, I say it's an easy one because this one is very close to my heart. It's the App of the Year Awards.
Okay.
You know? It always really gets me teary eyed when I do think about the impact that we've made in the lives of, you know, young people in South Africa in particular, but across our borders into the rest of Africa as well. So App of the Year started off really as a very small competition back in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, where apps were a very new thing in the world. You know, the first iPhone was released, and apps as we know them now were launched with the very first iPhone. And, you know, we wanted to, you know, build a competition platform that recognizes people that build, you know, mobile apps. And it really started off as just as a competition. And fast forward, you know, now it's the competition, but we also have an academy where we actually teach young people and give them a crash course into app development, and it's completely free.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started the app of the year itself started in 2012, as I said. But this online school that we have, you know, sort of found us on the way. And, you know, this year alone, we've educated over 200,000 young people. And when I think about right now, they're actually going through the final exams for 2025. And you see the excitement of people as they download their certificates, they post their certificates and they say, you know, thank you for this opportunity. It was absolutely free. And it's absolutely open to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, you've got people from, you know, high school learners to, I think the oldest that I've seen of the 217,000 learners that we have was a 65-year-old.
Oh,
you know?
Man.
So it's, yeah.
Oh, man. Have any of your students won the award?
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, we've had like, you know, a part of the app of the year. All the big apps that we know as a country have sort of been launched at App of the Year and by App of the Year.
Yeah.
Apps such as Eskom's Push, Checkers 60, Naked Insurance, Pineapple Insurance, you know, all of these very major apps. This platform is sort of like the honing ground and where people go to be recognized and to actually launch their businesses to become, you know, the household names that we know them today. So some of the students as well that have come out of the academy go on. And I mean, you know, it's this academy, you know, again, I do emphasize that it's a free academy that's just open to anybody. At the end of it, people get an accredited certificate, and they use that to create jobs for themselves and others through entrepreneurship or through, you know, going into formal work. And listen, the case studies are endless. And the feedback that we get from people is actually quite tear-jerking, you know, and that imposter syndrome sometimes does creep in, and you're like, is this us? Is this?
And it is. Oh, man. So what are you big deal most?
I'm so not. And can listen, I think what we do as a company is really you know, something that, you know, you look at and it's something to be very, very proud of. But again, it's something that I can't take as myself. I know Haley feels exactly the same way. Me and her, often, you know, when we speak, we, you know, always point fingers at each other. Like, it was you. And she's like,
Oh, man.
But
it's
recognizing that, you know, there's people that are walking this journey with us.
And I think it's very characteristic of purposeful work, right? It is so much bigger than you. Yeah. And with that, I really want to ask you, how did you align your creative passion with business rigor to serve both brands and audiences? And I ask this because we've got a plethora of young people who are so passionate about various things, right? They're gifted, they are talented, but they don't really seem to know how to align those creative passions or even those talents with something that will be sustainable and something that will be commercial as well. So what did your journey look like?
So I think on a very practical note, it's at the end of it, it's business, right? And you have to treat your passions as a business. And you have to take it that seriously. So, you know, that you've got a passion for storytelling is one thing, but you actually need to allow and work on the business as a business and allow the business to flourish as a business. And then your passions obviously follow you.
Yeah.
You know, that's who you are and that's who you are at the core. But what you need to work on, I think, is actually the business element of stuff. So we take business very seriously. I think in our domain with my partner, we speak business a lot more than we speak about anything else, because that's the driver and that's the vehicle that you have to use in order to. And I think, you know, what comes out in taking business seriously is that, you know, it also needs to be rooted in a purpose. You can't just do business for the sake of doing business. as a creative, especially, you know, because we've got this itch, this creative itch that you need to scratch. But I think the vehicle, you know, to all of it is the commerce. So you have to take the commerce very seriously and treat it as serious as, you know, a stock capitalist, I guess, would treat business. But at the at the core of it, purpose then would come in and purpose would lead.
You know, people who know me will think that you and I had a conversation prior to this, because this is what I always say, right? I think the worst advice that could ever be given to anybody trying to forge their way in the world is follow your passion. And I'm not saying passion is not important. What I believe, which is what you so beautifully articulated, is follow your purpose and bring the passion along.
Yes.
Because at the core of purpose is other people, you solving their problem. And so there's no way that when you're solving the problem, that value will not follow that. And when you add value in whatever way you're solving the problem, monetary value will follow. But the passion, rather, is something you have to bring along, because then it becomes another job that exhausts you and burns you out and irritates you. And you end up being completely disengaged from that, as you would from any other job.
And I guess it answers the question as well. It's like, why do you wake up in the morning? And it becomes a lot easier when purpose then is the lead, because you know it's so much bigger than you.
Yeah.
So you've got a reason to actually get up in the morning and show up every day. You know, one of you know, the conversations that we have at the office. 2 weeks ago, I underwent surgery, minor surgery, but you know, an ankle surgery, but you know, I've been showing up to work every single day. And yeah, you could say this one is a workaholic, or, you know, whatever the case is. But in my case, it's, you know, you wake up because you want to show up to work, because you've got 217,000 students that have graduated because of something that you've built. And it's so much bigger than you. And it really takes away the selfishness of you know, sometimes we get into our selfish bag. And I guess it really answers the question of why do you wake up in the morning.
Yeah. And once that is clear to you, you realize that there's nothing else you'd rather be doing with your life. So if you're not doing what else do you want to be doing?
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of purpose, I do want us to talk about Impact SA's purpose, right? It's become the definitive showcase of corporate transformation. And I want to hear from you. What did you see missing? And how did you build the platform then to meet that need?
Yeah. So, Mpumi, as I say, you know, years ago when we started, you know, we started working in the enterprise and supply development space in corporate social investment. So I think as a company, we had a knack very early on around, you know, showcasing the good that, you know, corporates, civil society, nonprofit organization is doing out there. And like really elevate stories of goodness beyond, you know, a lot of the negative zeitgeist that we, you know, encounter as a society, as a country, as a world. And, you know, we started off, you know, really publishing, you know, annual publications around all of that. And I think, you know, when we built Impact SA, it was at the height of, you know, the COVID lockdowns. And it was really around pivoting to ensure that, you know, these stories aren't just, you know, in a book, but then they are told and, you know, beyond geography, and, you know, we can really elevate, you know, the reach of them. And like Impact SA was really built on that premise, that we wanted to showcase the good that is happening in society, from corporates, from government, you know, from civil society, from nonprofit organizations, and just, you know, flood, you know, good news stories into the world.
Oh, man.
Because there is a lot of good that
there is so much good. I remember listening to 702 on my drive to work the one time, and one lady called and said, "There's no good in the world." And Lebuchi said, "No, ma'am, actually there is so much good in
There's
the world."
So much,
and I guess with news and headlines and all these things, it's easy to get sucked into the darkness.
Absolutely.
So this is why Impact is such a brilliant platform.
You know, and maybe cautioning against, like, against You know, there's terms these days cautioning against toxic positivity, but you can't really, you know, as a society, always operate on the premise of negativity. And hope for people, hope for society, comes from the goodness. I don't, as a human being myself personally, I don't operate in negativity. You know, and I think that's something that's seeped into, you know, our company as well, that, you know, we operate from a vantage point of goodness and positivity, and, you know, everything that we want to do, that we do really comes out of out from there.
Yeah. What you focus on magnifies as well.
It magnifies.
100%. And I know you weren't there during the early years, but do you have any idea of how the business was funded? I can imagine there wasn't any big VC backing.
No.
What creative models perhaps were executed, were leaned on to stay afloat and scale fast?
So we are a very multifaceted multifaceted personality of a company.
All right.
You know, we've got the heart, you know, we've got the purpose and the passion, but I think we're also very astute business people, you know. So sales is the driving force of our organization. So we've never been, and, you know, regardless of whether I was there at the very formative years, but, you know, we've never been funded. It's always been through selling. It's through building a product, and then going out there and literally hunting for you know, a purchaser of
the
product. And that's what entrepreneurship is. You know, for me, at a very basic level, entrepreneurship is identifying a problem, first of all, building a solution for that problem, and then selling it. And sales is probably the most important thing that we have as a company. You know, even now, sort of like part of my day-to-day routine is, you know, checking in with, you know, the various departments that we have, but I spend a lot more time with our sales team, you know, because that's the driver of revenue for the business, in order for us to deliver value for our clients, but in order for us to deliver value for society as well. So we've never been funded. It's really started off, you know, as a bootstrapped project, and everything really emanated, you know, on that premise. And it's really till today, you know, we're quite a sizable company, you know, humbly saying, quite a sizable company, but we operate, you know, as a bootstrap company where, you know, costs, you know, and revenue and profits are measured, very, very tightly.
I'm not seeing your face right now, but the way you're speaking sounds like you're speaking from so much glee. You're really proud of this company, aren't you?
Listen, what's funny is I was actually feeling a little bit despondent this afternoon. And I think this conversation has really reminded me of, you know, a lot of the goodness that's that this company is.
I love that.
I think he's coming out because of this conversation.
I love that. Now, Sizwe, delivering 100+ events annually requires precision. What processes and teams or values ensure that high volume doesn't mean compromised execution?
Yeah. I think process is paramount. You know, knowing, you know, how to onboard new projects or projects that are coming on, and building processes around that. I think the one thing that I did mention just now is sort of the various departments that we have. So the way that we've segmented our organization is quite streamlined into, you know, so sales and then onboarding into the production team who actually execute on events. But I think as well, what's very important is open communication amongst the various departments. So we spend a lot of time together talking, planning, you know, as much as, you know, there needs to be time for the execution. But, you know, open communication is really an important thing. So processes spending a lot of time together and just streamlining the organization. Last year, we reported on 104 events that we executed throughout the year.
In 12
and
months?
And that's just events.
In
Sorry?
12 months?
No, last year, the entire of 2024.
This is the thing. It's 12 months, 104 events. That's bizarre.
And I mean, that's events. There's obviously also sort of the video production work that needs to be done. There's the campaigning, there's the online, there's the social and digital marketing work that needs to be done. So it's but again, I think it's constantly building as well, you know, and building with the teams and, you know, identifying sort of gaps, you know, within the teams. And I think the one thing that part of this communication is not that, you know, where there are gaps, it's not, you know, ostracizing, you know, departments or people or team members or anything. It's identifying gaps to plug them, you know, very early on in processes. So, you know, I think Haley and I are quite good together in sort of like looking ahead and identifying that, you know, in 3 months from now, we might encounter a problem. How do we solve for that while the teams really execute on the very short term, you know, work that we have?
Yeah, sure. Now, I can imagine that working with large institutions can challenge agility. And so I'm so curious to hear, how do you preserve creative identity even when you have to deliver on those client briefs?
I think the preservation of creative identity is one thing, but what I do sort of want to answer is, you know, a level of stagnation that comes with that, and which is a challenge. And I mean, we are, you know, quite nimble, you know, very fast moving.
Yes, startup-y.
But the ethos that we have, and you know, it's a work ethic, is that our existence is to make the work of a client easier and not to add on to that. So I think our clients really appreciate that about us, that you know, we're able to move very quickly and execute very quickly on their behalf. So sometimes, you know, there's issues of scope creep, which, you know, we because of our work ethic, we don't really, you know, take into heart or personally. If there's an additional, you know, one, two, or three things that need to be done in order to move a project forward, we're happy to take that on for the interest, in the interest of the project.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that people who say, "Oh, I'm burnt out. I need to be an entrepreneur to escape 9 to 5." Actually, come to realize that, you just signed up for 24/7.
And one of the biggest misconceptions that you know, I've realized with that is that oftentimes people think that entrepreneurship is because, well, the misconception is that, you know, you're going into entrepreneurship to be your own boss. Actually, you're not your own boss.
No.
You've got clients to report to.
Yeah.
And also, you've got, well, it's clients and customers that you need to report to. Those are your bosses. You know, so I think it's a very skewed conception, you know, wanting to go into entrepreneurship, thinking that, you know, you're going to be your own boss, and it's that's not the case.
Yeah, but with that, how do you preserve your personal space and sanity while delivering excellence?
I think it's different for everybody. You know, personally, I really enjoy my alone time. So I really take that, you know, to heart. I reserve quite a lot of time for myself. For example, on Friday nights, I have, you know, this thing called Gratitude Fridays, where, you know, after work, I come home, just sit and reflect on the week that was, and just, you know, be grateful for the week that was. And just sit in it. You know, whether it was a good week or a bad week, that's just sort of like my my ritual and tradition, I guess. And there's a whole lot of, you know, things as well that I do on a personal note to really preserve that. But I also do think that, like, work feeds me as well. So it feeds my soul So the more I show up, for me, it really fuels and gets me going. So, you know, I think it is different for everybody. An example, Haley, you know, she enjoys walks. So every single evening, you know, from a certain time, I know that like I can't reach her. Well, she's not taking any phone calls because she's out taking a walk. So that's her in her personal capacity. So I think it's different for everybody. I think, you know, people just need to find, you know, what works
their
for them.
Yeah, and I do want to tap into that reflective norm, right? And I know it's not Friday, but I would love for you to think about some missteps and some setbacks that you might have had that have really rewarded you and gifted you lessons you will never forget.
Sure. There's been many. There's been so many. Yeah, I actually don't even know where to start, but I don't even know if I can, you know, mention them in specifically.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing is that I've learned in my personally is communicating, because, you know, as a entrepreneur and as a person who's learned over years to be quite self-sufficient and self-sustaining, you know, asking for help, you know, sometimes can be difficult, you know, and communicating that, you know, sometimes poses a challenge, because, yeah, you always think that like you can do and solve issues yourself. So I think, you know, my biggest learning over the years is, you know, really opening up, whether it's to my partner or to the team, that and as a leader, it doesn't mean that like you've got all the answers. So, you know, opening up to the team, you know, to the entire company, that guys, I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Are there any suggestions on, you know, how we can solve this? That's actually a really huge lesson that I've learned.
Yeah. If somebody who's an entrepreneur is sitting at home right now thinking, oh, sister, I just want to throw in the towel. It is so tough. I'm not getting the sales that I need to get. It's just so discouraging for some other reason, right? What is the thing that you would want them to know right now? And not even like gaslighting them or that toxic positivity we mentioned earlier, but what is the thing you would want them to know right now that will get them waking up tomorrow and giving this thing another try?
It's like life, right? Bad times don't last. And I feel like it's as simple as that. I mean, there's bad weeks, there's bad days, there's terrible days.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying earlier on that, like, you know, I felt despondent today because, you know, of a potential loss of a client. And I was thinking, man, I don't know anymore, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just one thing. And reflecting on the 20 years, this is just a small blip.
Yeah.
It's one day, you know. And I don't know, by the end of the year, it probably will all be forgotten. So I think it's just reflective of what life is. And entrepreneurship is a mirror and a metaphor for that. You know, if you don't want to give up, don't give up, and it gets better. It actually does get better. And if it doesn't get better, you build the resilience. You build the resilience to be a better hunter, to be a better salesperson. You know, there are days that are going to knock you down, but
And it also goes back to what we said earlier, right? Like, this is your thing. This is why you're here. This is your purpose. Give it another shot.
And I love that you've said that, because, you know, if it's for you and if you feel that this is what you're meant to do, then, you know, wake up and give it another shot.
Yeah.
And maybe you might get beat down. And, you know, the old age, the old analogy is that the winner, the winner is the loser that's got up one more time, you know. So I mean, you listen, like I sit with the sales people, with our sales people more than I sit with anybody else. We go through 1,000 no's before we get the yes.
Ooh.
And you know, those thousand no's, yeah, there's moments of despondency that happen in between, but you know that, you know, you a positive will come. So if it is yours, and if you feel that it is yours, then go for it.
Sizwe, when you're navigating business strategy, creative output, and client demands, what sustains your creative spark?
Ooh, I'm a sucker for content and storytelling.
Okay.
Oh, I'm such a sucker for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sharp. The business part is business, and yeah, that's that. But I really, you know, resonate with, you know, strategies and clients that enable or want to enable a level of storytelling, and the challenge of that is, you know, really something that I admire. And it's also around, like, you know, rising to the occasion. When you met, you know, with a brief or with a product that you need to deliver, and you've got a client that's, you know, excited by this, you have to rise to the occasion, and that really, you know, sparks and fires, you know, the creative juices and the want and willingness to execute. And as a leader, you relay that energy to the team. Everything is energy, so you relay that to the team, and I guess we all get onto the same page around, you know, the excitement of executing for a particular project.
Yeah. With almost 20 years under your belt, I want us to, like, look at the next 10 years. Right? Right? God, I want us to look at the next 10 years. If 2035 is about design thinking blended with impact storytelling, your favorite thing, what are you building now to get there?
So we are, our big challenge for 2025. Last year, we set out last 2 years, we set out a vision for global dominance. So this is sort of like our first year, you know, foraying into international markets. And it has been challenging because, you know, it's new markets. You don't really, you know how selling into markets like that looks like. So that's quite a challenge that we are facing currently. But I think for me, the next 10 years is really around building beyond our borders and building Creative Space Media into a global marketing agency that's, you know, obviously South African led. But you know, I think we know the stories of, you know, the very large agencies, and I tell you, like, early on, man, way back, sitting here now and thinking, you know, about what Creative Space Media was about, I don't know, let's say 10 years ago, I never thought that we would have the ability and the want and the desire to build globally. So, you know, when you think of, you know, these global agencies, the Saatchi and Saatchis, and we have an opportunity to be at that level, it's actually quite, it's exciting, but you also understand that it's a long road ahead, and you want to stay the course.
And on that, how are you building leadership pipeline within Creative Space Media? Are you mentoring the next generation of South African creative entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. I think, like, you know, even just within our ranks, you know, upskilling is a very, very major thing. There's quite a lot of upskilling that goes on, you know, and cross-skilling as well. You know, where some of our team members, you know, a person is not just a researcher, but they're a researcher and, you know, going into social media marketing, and obviously the upskilling into leadership. That's something that we hold quite dear, and especially now because of, you know, our dreams and our vision of you know, going international and you know, building abroad. You know, you don't want that vacuum, so you have to build you know, your timber from within.
Yeah. And just as we wrap this up, because I'm looking at time and thinking, time, if I catch you, when I catch you, because it's going by so quickly. What is the skill you believe most people overlook when starting creative businesses particularly? And how can they develop it today?
I think two skills. Mm. The first one, the very first one that was paramount is EQ. Mm. I think emotional intelligence is such a valuable skill to have, because you could be the most intelligent person from an IQ perspective.
Yeah.
You might be the best salesperson or the most creative person.
Mm.
But if you're difficult to work with, it just poses a challenge, not only for your own people, but just generally. So I think empathy, emotional intelligence is very high up there. To be very honest, I don't know how you build that skill. So I can't answer that.
I think it's built on honesty. And I really think it's built on honesty. Honesty with yourself, but honesty with other people as well. Because I think when the opportunities you create with yourself, to be honest about how you showed up, what you're feeling like, what is going on around you, you're able then to, you know, adjust your sales here and there. But also honest with other people about how something went, how it landed, what the situation was like between you and them, and being able to navigate that. I think it's really built on honesty.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the second one, and especially for creatives, is business acumen. I think, creatives, that's something that I have been preaching, to creatives since Beetroot Production days.
Yeah.
We used to do a thing called the Festival of Entrepreneurship with our other partners, the Hookup Dinner. And, I've always, thought that, like, as creatives, you already have the creativity. But I think building business acumen for creatives in particular is extremely, extremely important.
Yeah.
Because as I said, like, earlier on, that, being a creative is one thing. But in order for your ideas, for your thoughts, for your vision, for your dream, your purpose to live, or your passions to live, you actually need a vehicle to drive those. And in this world of commerce, business is the language that we need to speak it.
Sis, we're EP Beetroot Production.
Beetroot Production, it's gone. No, can I? Beetroot Productions was also a time of its own that I could speak about for ages.
Yeah.
Again, like, there are very many lessons learned, and especially on accepting failure, very big wins, very big failures as well.
Mm.
Through my relationship with Haley, that sort of got amalgamated into.
Mm.
Creative Space Media.
Yeah. And I love that you're saying that, because it, and especially as a creative man, because your work is you. And I know I'm saying that like blasphemously, but like, your work is you, because you are the creative, and everything you produce is from your heart
and
your
mind.
100%. It's completely you. So I can imagine having to walk away from something that is you can be quite jarring. But what I love about what you're saying is you left the entity behind. But the creativity, the acumen, the intellect, the lessons, you brought it along, because they stay with you. You did not become Beetroot Production. It was an extension of you. And when that was not working out, you brought everything that made it what it was, that made it work, into this new thing. And it's thriving.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just want to give my thoughts on what this conversation highlighted to me and really meant to me, as I was making notes as we were going, because it was such an impactful conversation, and I've always known this, but I think it just got highlighted today, that entrepreneurship is not just about profits. If that is all you're chasing, good luck.
No, that's luck. Not entrepreneurship.
Yeah. At the heart of it is purpose. It's storytelling and legacy. There's got to be something that is bigger than you, you've got to be able to really connect with it and you know, reflect on the touch, because I think that's what storytelling is, right? Reflecting on the checkpoints or yes. reflecting on the milestones and being able to convey them for the good of maybe your brand, but also those that are affiliated with your brand. And legacy, man, something to look forward to. I think when you shared your story with us, it really embedded in my mind that brand equity for you, or maybe for any organization, begins long before that first sale. You know, the social impact can be profits, but it has to be done with integrity. I cannot Absolutely. Imagine that you'd want to be selling people shoddy things just because you want
Look,
a profit.
Above all else is the crown of a good name.
Sizwe.
In person and in business.
Yeah. And you've been hopping on the fact that you have to get your business mind right, because the reality is, create a systems balance discipline with dream. You can't just have a dream and ideas. We need systems. We need the acumen. It needs to all come together. And so thank you so much, man, for showing us how to lead in a space where story meets strategy. You know, you said world dominance. And even from this conversation, I'm like, of course. Yeah. it's happening. It's going to come, you know. And
absolutely,
creativity fuels culture. This is what you've said. Even as you're speaking about your teams, I'm just like, I also want a managing director that will sit next to me and you know, encourage me and all of that. But man, this was such an amazing conversation. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you believe, if we don't say in this conversation, we would have shortchanged people?
Booms, I think I said, as you were wrapping up, I just thought that the one thought that I've always had dear is above all else is the crown of a good name.
A crown of a good name. Where do people find you? How do people interact with you and the amazing work that you're doing?
We're all over the socials. Our website is creativespacemedia.co.za. Mm-hmm. And everyone on the socials, we are Creative Space Media.
This was phenomenal. Thank you so much for sharing your time and wisdom with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
Bye.
Oh, man. I love that conversation. I hope you did too. I hope that you learned a lot from it. And with that, I am Nompumelelo Lombonane, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies. Tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.